Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just joining us, we're listening to Do Guns Reduce Crime, and we're listening to Gary Click, professor of the College of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Florida State University.
You may not have noticed, but there's actually more consensus among the six of us than might be evident at first. I don't think anybody really disputes the proposition that the effects of guns depends on who has them. I haven't heard anybody on the other side say that guns in the hands of non-criminals are just as bad as guns in the hands of criminals. It makes a huge difference. Basically, guns in the hands of non-criminals or in the hands of victims, regardless of any prior criminal behavior, reduce violence. They reduce it in the sense that once the gun is introduced by the victim, the offender stops aggressing, period. And so that's not a fantasy, as Professor Donahue would have you believe. It's about as firmly established a fact as we have to go on in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary Kleck. Another defier of easy pigeonholing is the man who is president of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He is a Republican, and he is the former mayor of Indianapolis. He has said that his position on gun control had a lot to do with nearly losing two close friends in a gun accident. This was during the time when they were all teenagers together. Now, all of these years later, we are pleased to introduce as our final speaker and speaking against the motion that guns reduce crime, Paul Hemke.
It's great to be here tonight. I'm just for the record, I was mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana, not Indianapolis, but another great city in the state of Indiana. I came to this issue as a mayor. Not only had I had the experience when I was a teenager of seeing a friend get a bullet in the back because of the all too common incident of we found a gun, we didn't know it was loaded, which happens every day in this country, but as a mayor, I saw what happens in a community when there are so many guns. I had police officers. One case I still remember well. I got the call in the middle of the night from the police chief. Our labor relations director, a police chief, married to a police officer. They kept the gun at their headboard. They wanted to be safe. They knew how to use the gun. They were police officers. They had a fight, domestic quarrel. She ended up dead. That happens a lot in this country. Actually, the statistics show that if you've got a gun in your home, it's 22 times more likely to be used against you or a family member than to protect you. And part of the reason is that the world doesn't easily divide into the good guys and bad guys, because there's always sort of a chance that any of us can get angry, any of us can get drunk. And if the gun is there, what's going to happen with that gun? When you look at the arguments for the proponents here, basically they talk about these 2 million defensive uses, and as Professor Donahue said, that's a questionable number. Yes, it was based on probability sampling. There were 66 people who responded to a poll that said they used a gun defensively. 66, and then you extrapolate that by the adult population of the U.S., and you get 2 million gun uses. Just 66. When you do sampling and have such a small affirmative number, and then you multiply it by huge things, you get these outrageous things. Based on that, more people have been in flying saucers in this country. It shows what happens with statistics. The one statistic that doesn't lie are deaths. You have to do probability sampling for these other things, but when you look at deaths, you get the shocking statistics that 32 people are killed with guns every day in this country. 30,000 people die from guns every year. Other countries in the world have the same level, generally, of rapes and of burglaries and of robberies and of assaults that we do. But we are far and away the most deadly country. In fact, if you think about it for a second, if the proposition were true that guns reduce crime, we should be the safest country in the world. And we're not. And it's because we do have so many guns, and those guns too easily get in the wrong hands. Let's do things to stop gun trafficking. Do you realize that you can go in and buy 81 of the same make and model of a gun tomorrow? And what do you think is going to happen when someone did that at Charlie Brown's gun store in Dayton, Ohio a few years back? 81 of the same make and model. They sell them out of the trunk of their car. Last thing I wanted to comment on is the Supreme Court case. The Supreme Court case, while making it clear that gun bans are off the table, made it clear that we can have reasonable restrictions, that we can restrict who gets the guns, where they take the guns, how the guns are sold, how the guns are stored, and what and all the things that deal with guns. That's where this debate should come down.
Polling the audience, before the debate on the motion, and we're going to put them up on the screen now. The motion being guns reduce crime. 13% of you supported this motion before the debate. 60% of you opposed the motion, and 27% were undecided. We'll be polling you again toward the end of the debate to see whether any minds have been changed. I want to go to John Lott. Your work embodies this motion that guns reduce crime, and your statistical work embodies that motion. And yet tonight, I heard some of the fundamental work you've done referred to as a fantasy, and I heard the question raised, if guns prevent crime, why isn't this the most safe nation in the world? What is the answer to that, and what about the fantasy issue?
I'll just take the fantasy issue first. There are lots of academics who have looked at the relationship between concealed handgun laws and crime rates. And if you look at papers published in refereed academic journals by economists and criminologists, you'll find about 70% of them find that when right to carry laws get passed, there's drops in violent crime rates. About 30% say there's no change that's there. And then there's no one, not one refereed academic journal that I know of, that finds that there's a bad effect from these. So there's a lot of people that have looked at this in many different ways.
John, you're ignoring the National Academy of Science panel.
I'm happy to get
15-1. Including some of the top econometricians in the country, and their conclusion was your work is not supported
by
scientific
evidence. None of them were experts
on
it. Their opinions on that issue have absolutely nothing to do with it. John's talking about what experts thought.
Just to respond, National Academy of Sciences. I mean, this was a panel set up by the Clinton administration. I don't think it was unbiased.
This was not a panel set up by
the Clinton administration. It was started there. But the point is, what James Q. Wilson, who's this hack that you were referring to, and I think a lot of people would regard James Q. Wilson as probably the top criminologist in the country. He was the person who was dissenting on this. And what Jim showed was that if you look at every single one of the National Academy of Sciences estimates on the impact of right to carry laws on murder rates, every single one of their own estimates showed that right to carry laws reduced murder rates. And if you looked at their other things, virtually all their other estimates for all the other types of crimes showed reductions in those.
John, I have
the
report.
There was no estimate.
I have the report right here.
Not one estimate.
I have the report right in front of me, and it does not support what you just said.
Is it true or is it not true that every regression, every estimate that they had on right to carry and murder showed a drop? Is there one estimate that they showed it didn't fall statistically?
Yeah, there are some, maybe not statistically significant, but but the bottom line, John, is, as the panel suggested, the elephant in the room was crack cocaine. Rural states that did pass these laws did not experience the big run-up in crime. And when you do your analysis, it is the difference between the flat performance in the rural states and the increases in crime that generates that result. That's why James Q. Wilson was outvoted 15-1.
Okay, I think we have impasse on this.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. Up next, J. Robert Oppenheimer. After viewing the first atomic test in 1945, Robert Oppenheimer was an American theoretical physicist and professor of physics at the University of California, Berkeley.
We knew the world would not be the same. A few people laughed. A few people cried. Most people were silent. I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty, and to impress him takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." I suppose we all thought that one way or another.
And now back to Do Guns Reduce Crime?
And I want to go to Chief Kerlikowske, Seattle Police Chief, because you were talking about British bobbies being unarmed and preferring that in many situations because they felt being armed would invite assault. And yet Gary Kleck, arguing for the motion, said, why are police armed in the first place unless it is to deter assault? Chief, can you take that on?
Yes, I can. And getting away from the statistics and going to the police officers are highly trained with firearms. They practice and qualify. They can't graduate from the academy without qualifying. But when you look at the numbers of assaults on police officers in the United States, and I remember, I can picture every moment to this day, of the first time I had an officer killed in the line of duty. Young, bright, talented, incredible shape, shot 13 times with his own handgun. Officers are routinely wounded and assaulted with their own guns. That's why not true.
Gary Kleck is arguing for the motion, the liberal, who works just from the numbers.
You know, here's a number for you, and it's a very easy number to understand. For the most recent year for which we have data, in the entire United States, there was exactly one police officer killed with his own gun. One. You can stretch the concept, happens routinely quite a bit, but I don't think one out of 600,000 police officers in the entire United States
can
really be described as routine. That's some indication of the chief's credibility when he says something happens frequently or routinely.
Let the chief respond.
I mean, actually, you'd have to be pretty stupid to assault an armed police officer who has a baton, a uniform,
indeed,
a radio,
would.
A gun, pepper spray, and extra ammunition, and is wearing body armor. That probably is quite correct. But there are very few, because of body armor and the changes in body armor in this country, there are very few police officers now killed or wounded in the line of duty at the numbers that we used to see.
Paul Helmke, as a former mayor of Fort Wayne to whom the police reported, were you surprised to hear Stephen Halbrook, who represents the NRA, say that police do not have a responsibility to protect individuals?
Steve's argument, at some extent, is true. People do have a right of self-defense. Supreme Court made that very clear in the Heller case. I do wonder a little bit about Justice Roberts' comments that he wanted to be able to shoot his gun, but he needed to turn on the light and put on his reading glasses before that. And that's the example Steve just gave. And I thought, gee, if the Chief Justice needs to put on his glasses and have his reading and turn the light on before he can shoot, maybe he shouldn't be shooting. But it gets into the issue of, yes, people do have a right of self-defense, but what we do when we live in communities is we set up police departments because they're the individuals that are trained, they're the individuals that respond, and that often when an individual has a gun in their home, again, as I said, it's 22 times more likely to be used against them or family member. 20% of the time that an officer is shot, it's his gun or his partner's, so you've got to expand that to the partner's gun. 20% of the time when an officer is in a shootout situation, they miss their target.
Only 20% of the time that they hit their target. I want to give Stephen a chance to respond. Stephen Halbrook of the NRA.
There's something really bizarre about this picture that citizens with guns are totally incompetent and police with guns are totally incompetent and they're likely to be taken away from them, but somehow criminals are really good with guns. Where did they get all this training?
Well, they're not
There's
that good either.
There's something bizarre about this picture that citizens and police cannot defend themselves with guns, but criminals can successfully use guns to aggress against other people. It just doesn't make sense to say that you should never be able to protect yourself, that you shouldn't use a gun, that you're incompetent, that you're totally worthless with it, and it's just against any common sense.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores.
We're going to go to the audience for some questions now. There are a lot of hands up, and what we're going to do is take two or three questions. That one right there.
I was really interested. All these gentlemen seem to be old enough to have children over 18 or 21. I was wondering, would you recommend that your children keep a gun handy?
I hope my kids have
guns. This is John Lott answering.
I mean, I hope my kids have guns. I didn't own a gun until 1996, after I had started doing the research. But at this point, given that I believe the benefits far outweigh the risks, I think I would be disappointed if my kids didn't own a gun.
Anybody on the other side respond to that?
I wouldn't want my daughters to have a gun.
That's Paul Helmke.
When I look at the statistics about how that adds to the risk of suicide, the risk of being misused, the risk of it coming up being stolen, used in a domestic quarrel, I think it's just too much of a risk.
Down here?
I think that we're conflating statistical data about societies and societal factors with the guns themselves. So I'm not clear where you have had a concealed carry law put into place within that particular community. So you can hold constant for crack use or non-crack use, rural or urban. What has been the result? Does it reduce crime? Does it increase crime?
John Lott, you were going to answer the question that the questioner put to us about whether there is...
No, it's an excellent question, actually. And that's precisely what you want to do. You don't want to just compare across places because, you know, Idaho is different than California, and England has different underlying crime rate before they change any types of gun control laws than the United States has. And so what you're doing in these tests is you're precisely doing that. You're seeing how crime rates change in a state after that state's adopted right to carry laws and how that change is comparing to other places that didn't change their laws over that period of time. That's exactly the way that you want to do the test. And all the tests that I do, that's precisely
I'm
the
seeing
type
a great
of
deal of skeptical looks from the opposing table.
Yeah, all the
John,
tests that John
Donahue
do,
is taking this.
All the tests that John do
does.
Show that crime gets better. But again, this is exactly what the National Academy of Science looked at, and they concluded the opposite.
Gil Kerlikowski, Chief.
Just within the last several months at one of the largest festivals in the city, the Folklife Festival, tens of thousands of people and literally dozens of police officers, officers within spitting distance, in fact, of the crowd, a young man who had been on methadone, who had had a number of other problems, had a license issued by the sheriff in a neighboring county so that he could carry a concealed firearm anywhere. And in the middle of this crowd, he looked at someone, that person looked at him, and they got into a fight. The gun went off, and it not only discharged across the assailant, the gun also then ended up going through the hand of a young man and into the thigh of another woman. That is a person that should have never had a concealed firearms permit.
John Lott.
One question that keeps on coming up here, a point from the other side, is that people with concealed handgun permits, they may do bad things. And it's easy to check. In the state of Washington, you've had permits being issued since 1960. The type of incident where there was this wounding is the only case I know like that in the state of Washington. Nobody has been convicted of murder, for example, in Washington that's had a concealed carry permit, and you're talking about almost 50 years. And you see that in state after state. In Florida, you can go to the website for the department that issues permits, and they have detailed data there. You find that from October 1987 through September 31st of this year, they had issued over 1.41 million permits to 1.41 million people. Of those people, 166 had their permits revoked for any type of firearms violation. Virtually all of those were for one type of violation, that was someone who accidentally carried a concealed handgun into a gun-free zone, like an airport or what have you.
It's interesting that Florida's brought up, though. The Sun Sentinel did a study in 2006 before the legislature closed off this website. This is the new move, by the way. But the Sun Sentinel found 216 people with active warrants, 128 with domestic violence restraining orders, 9 people charged with felonies or violent reckless misdemeanors, 6 registered sex offenders, at least one prison inmate, and another 1,400 people who had pled guilty or no contest to felony charges all had concealed carry permits in the state of Florida.
And then the Florida legislature said,
we don't want to make this information public anymore.
Gary Kleck says that Paul Hemke is leaving something out.
Notice what Paul's leaving out of that. You may have been listening for, well, how many people did something with their gun that they are now legally entitled to carry around in public places? How many times did they commit a violent crime in a public place? That's the only thing a carry permit allows you to do that you couldn't do without the permit. In fact, none of those people did a violent crime with a gun in a public place, and the fact that they had carry permits had absolutely nothing to do with anything. There was no harmful consequence of them getting those carry permits.
To keep the world alive and war to cease. We gotta have joy. True in our hearts with strength we can't destroy. People hear us through our voice. The world knows there's no choice. We're making safe. Choice.
Messages from Access Sacramento.